Hey, just want to jump in and mention my sponsors. I'm doing them all in the front, so I hope people appreciate that. That's kind of a new thing that's been going out in the podcast world. And this episode is such a great episode. I'm so excited. I really am. Kay Lisby's interview, I hope you listen to that, number 238, man. It just blew me away because she is the real deal. That arbitrage group she's running is just rocking it. I'm in it and I'm watching just people just knocking it dead. And, you know, for $149 for you to be able to get in there, there is a free week that she's giving if you go through my link, and I have a link on this episode. But, I mean, to me, that's how you can build up this Q4. And if you even can't get in, get on the waiting list because she's going to pull from there when somebody drops for whatever reason. So get in there, Gay Lisby's Million Dollar Arbitrage. I have a link, and you're also going to get that 7-day free trial. Seller Lab Scope, I can't talk enough about it. I just got another note from somebody just saying, hey, what I was able to do with Scope and blah, blah, blah. That is so cool to me, hearing those successes and hearing that you heard it through my show. It just makes me tingle because it's like getting exposed to that stuff is how you figure it out, right? Somebody else smarter than me has figured it out. I'm just bringing you the information. It's so neat to see. And so Scope's going to let you really work on your private label or wholesale and help you get the keywords right. Ultimately, that's how you get the buy box. You got to know what people are searching for. You put that in there. You get that adjusted to know exactly what they're searching for. And boom, you get found, right? Being found on that page one. How do you do it? By knowing the right keywords. How do you do that? Look at your competitors and use their keywords. That's how you do it. And Scope allows you to do that. I mean, it's just a powerful thing. Solutions for e-commerce. Karen Locker, you've heard me talk a lot about her. If you haven't met her, you should. A smart lady who knows what she's doing. I, for example, today had four items where, I forget what they called it. It was flagged for quality. There were quality alerts. That's what it was. And it turns out there's an image issue. And she's like, well, yeah, there's Amazon's now making a change. It has to be 80%, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, I've lost interest already. Could you help me? And she's like, fixed. That's the value of having an account manager, right? Or when I get those calls, hey, I'm calling about case number, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, that goes to my other person. And that just happens to be my team member who happens to be Karen, her team. Solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum saves you $50. You're going to save $50. And she's going to do an inventory health report for you. To me, that's value. Know what inventory is healthy. You got Q4. You still can get some inventory out as of this recording for free. You probably want to do it. So jump on and get with her and tell her I sent you. So it's solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum. GoDaddy is another sponsor, and I love what they're doing because I'm a domain hoarder. We've already acknowledged that. I've got a problem. And I just love the fact that I could save 30% finally because I never did. So try godaddy.com/momentum and get your domain. But also buy that privacy. Look out there in one of the Facebook groups. You'll see somebody complaining about the lack of privacy. Well, buy the privacy. It's not that expensive. And again, you're saving 30% on it. It's really a smart deal. And Grasshopper, try grasshopper.com/momentum. It's the professional way to present your company. You don't have to carry a second phone. It's an app that goes on your phone, but it allows your calls to get routed effectively. And for real, I mean, I always say you can have them go press one for customer service, but that could go to your customer service team if you use one, right? That can go to that person. Or I'm surprised nobody's offering that services to us to be the customer service department for a lot of us, or a Zendesk in effect. Somebody should offer those services. But that's what's cool is you know, by using Grasshopper, they press two to get to that department, and then they can come in and you know, effectively represent you. I just think it's so cool. So try grasshopper.com/momentum. It's going to save you $50, and you're going to be able to all of a sudden become that professional organization you want to become. Man, I just appreciate my sponsors. I hope you do too.
Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 239, Danny McMillan. I was fortunate enough to meet Danny face-to-face. I've seen his name out there, seen it. He's spoken a bunch of places. Met him in Vegas and just immediately took a liking to him. Smart, smart, smart dude. Has probably one of the coolest skill sets of figuring out things like breaking them down in their simplest tasks and then attacking them and just going all on them. And we spent some time talking about that. And I just appreciate, again, I mean, it's 15 SKUs that he's talking about across multiple channels and different countries, but it's really that execution. It's that adjusting, that continuous improvement. Maybe that's the best phrase I could use for it, that he really seems to get and really, really has done well with. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. I'm very, very excited about talking to a gentleman across the pond. And we met in Vegas a few weeks ago, and I've seen his name, cause I've seen him, his image a bunch of places cause he speaks a lot, and just an amazing wealth of knowledge, in both the US and the UK market. And I just think that there's so much value to be gained from Danny McMillan. Welcome, Danny.
Thank you for having me, Stephen.
I appreciate you coming on. We had never met, but we both knew of each other, but we just never met before. And I'm fascinated. Your voice and your speaking ability is just so cool for me to hear, because I don't get to hear a lot of British people. And so when you get in there and you start talking, it just sounds so much more intelligent than when I do.
I'm not sure about that. I think sometimes it depends where you come from in England. I come from East London. So there's an area where people say where they're Cockneys.
Uh-huh.
So it's not actually the most desirable area. It's not like I speak a good clean Queen's English, if you like. But I suppose it has some character to it.
It definitely has more character than mine. So I appreciate that. So you are a seller. So let's just be upfront. So you sell in Amazon US, yes. Amazon UK, any other countries?
Europe, and we just launched into Japan a few weeks
ago. Okay. All right. Yeah. So you've got a wealth of experience, and you're selling. Are any of your products that you're selling on each of those platforms, are you selling them across platforms?
Yeah, that's okay. The key. Yeah.
Okay.
So we don't have a huge amount of range of products. We work with the products we have to sell across these platforms.
Well, let me ask you that before we go backwards. How many SKUs roughly would that be?
Between the SKUs, because you're multiplying the SKUs across the platforms, probably mm-hmm. about 15.
So 15 times 4 platforms, right? I mean, is that about right?
Yeah, there's okay. Well, it's 3 platforms, because UK and Europe is rolled into one over here. Then you've got the US, and then you've got Japan.
Okay, so it's across 3. And so and does that include variations or not variations? So a 1-pack, a 2-pack, a 4-pack?
Yeah, it's all told. Some have got color variations, some haven't.
Okay. All right, so that's perspective for people, and he's been selling for a long time, so he's got a lot of great view. Okay, but how did you get started, right? So, you know, I think about, you know, in the U.S., I mean, I don't know how it is for you, but in the U.S., we are told, at least I was told, you know, go to college, get a job, work at a job, work there for 30 or 40 years, retire. That's when you get to go fishing. That's when you get to enjoy life and play golf. And that's the way it was. Now, that's not the way it is, but that's what we were told. How about you? What's the perspective that you were given in the U.K. growing up?
Well, growing up in the UK, it's slightly different. I mean, I didn't finish school. I had a big accident when I was 15 that put me on a life support machine. And I didn't enjoy school very much, and I wasn't very well educated. So I left school early, and I pretty much bummed around for the first year or so. And then I went into the music industry. I was so keen on doing something that I was passionate about. I wasn't passionate about education and school. But I knew I wanted to do music, but I didn't know how. And I took advantage, like I've taken advantage now. I mentioned to you about joining the dots. So back then is that you could make records on computers, and you can still now, but it was just kind of coming in that advent there. So it gave me the opportunity to go and do what I love doing. So I've been one of the lucky few people to go through different career paths and fall in love each time. And get to do what I enjoy. Obviously, you had those moments in between the career paths where they change that you don't enjoy. But I've always managed to know that I do my best work when I love what I do.
Are there similarities, you know, thinking back to that thing that you love and then, you know, this Amazon business you love? Are there similarities that just fell into place for you that kind of gave you a clue? Because lots of people try things, right? So, you know, I've tried CrossFit. I don't love it. I met my friends. I've got friends that love it. But were there similarities for the patterns for you to start to recognize that just say, oh, this clicks for me, this clicks?
Yeah. I mean, I come from an era when I was in the music industry, I came in when we were selling vinyl and CDs, so you could make money for the music industry. Now, if you join the dots now with Amazon, FBA, you've got a record label and then you've got a private label, okay? Both of those are platforms to design and develop something, or in some cases, if you want to use technical terms from the music industry, remixing. So what we take from China is almost like remixing, isn't it? It's taking something and then improving, or hopefully improving on it. And so there's a lot of similarities there between the original music industry I was involved with. Now, most people know music industry today as through the advent of the internet. Obviously, most of the stuff now is there's a format change. No one's walking around with vinyl under their arms or playing CDs. It's all on devices, etc. So times have shifted, times have moved. But back when I was doing the most successful part of my music career, is that we were manufacturing records. So we're manufacturing vinyl and CDs and we're putting them into stores. It's like with Amazon, we're manufacturing in China and putting it into Amazon in the US or whatever country they are in. And there's a lot of common ground in the sense that making an album is a bit like developing a product line. You know, you're putting your life and soul into it in most cases. You're developing and coming up with some ideas of how you'd like it to be perceived. And you also are there to promote it, a bit like going on tour as a DJ, you know, promoting your records or your latest mix CD and stuff. So there was a lot of similarities. And I find that when you meet people on Amazon, there's the additional attraction to them. It's like, what am I good at that's good on Amazon? So when I first started out, I knew because I got a background in conversion optimization and PPC, that was my hook into Amazon. So, well, I can create visibility. Now what I've got to learn about is how do I do sourcing, how do I deal with shipping and overcome those kind of problems? And I think when you meet people, some people are great at branding, they're great at marketing, or they're copywriters, or they're product developers. Does that make sense? And then they have to make up the remaining skills to give them the composite whole.
Or they don't make it up and they fall flat, or they could hire that out. Right. I mean, that's the beauty of where we're at now. Yeah. Partner. Yeah. And what a great segue, because you do partner with a bunch of people. And that's would you say, I mean, and I always think of Andy Slammons, you met Andy, and what he's always says is that he was great on his own. He was doing it. He was killing it. He was selling a ton, but he brought his nephew in, and his nephew had a skill set that Andy just doesn't have. He doesn't have the attention span for it. It's not that he couldn't do it. It just, maybe the right way to say it, he doesn't have the love for it. But his nephew has, like, he's a master at it. He thinks nothing of it. And he said that his business went from one at his nephew in plus one, it went to three. It wasn't one and one equals two. He knew he couldn't get from one to two on his own. He just knew it.
Yeah.
And yet his nephew came in and made it a three. So he immediately, his nephew won, right? Because he got a half a business that was amazing. And he immediately had a real success. But then it grew to three. And Andy basically doubled. He said that he could have never done that. Has that been your experience too?
Yes. To a point. So, see, when I started out, I've got a silent partner across all of our businesses. And he doesn't, you know, his job is to put the cash in. My job is to turn the key. And so with the Amazon business, although I've got a meetup group in like the UK, like I don't like to use the term mastermind. It's basically a collection of big sellers, basically, who learn off each other. It's no money changes hand. We do face-to-face meetups, etc. So I think the Amazon journey is, in a way, it can be quite lonesome. And so that really helps. But I think for me, I started on my own, if you like. But then I developed into partnerships, and that really become like most recently over the last year or so. And you're right. I think like what Andy has said there, you work to your strengths and then you've got your weaknesses. And what I've learned is that because everyone launches, you hear all these success stories, but you forget about the failures as well, the products that didn't work. And you know that you've got to go through that cycle each time. Let's say you launch a product and it's not as successful as you want. Fine, you bounce back, you move on to the next product, but you have to go through that cycle. Two things I just find absolutely tedious about this business is dealing with the factory level, like the round robin emails from beginning to end to get the product there, and shipping. I cannot stand either of those things, but my partners love them. They love it. I mean, I know you've got a background in accountancy and stuff like that. It's another area that I just don't enjoy. And so I'll be, you know, I get frustrated when I do stuff that I don't particularly enjoy, because I know that if I do stuff that I love, I can excel at it and everyone can benefit. So I totally back what Andy's saying, is that one of the best moves I made is to go into partnerships with people with complementary skills. And if either of us don't have those complementary skills, we just farm it out.
You just farm it out. Now, I want to go back to the meetups, because you said something that it resonates with me, because I was watching a group of my friends yesterday. They were showing a picture. There were four of them, and I know all four guys, and they do an online kind of conversation meetup where they were talking big ideas, right? And they're all good-sized sellers, selling a few million dollars each. Yeah. And yet, the value of that is great, and it's awesome, and you can have the immediacy of it, right? I guess that's the beauty of it, right? Because I could call you like right now and talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But looking eye to eye, have you seen a difference between with a face-to-face meetup versus a Skype? Because I know you guys use Skype and all the different tools, you know. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So let me break down meetups. Let's break down like masterminds, etc. There's different aspects to these things. So for instance, I started my speaking work when I joined up and I met a guy called Anthony Vaughan, who ran the Amazon Seller in the UK, which is a meetup group. I went to the very first meetup, built a relationship. He moved to LA. I co-run the UK. So we worked up until about November last year. So what you had there is people with different levels of skill sets, but we were giving our time out for free. You know, we were coming up with slides. We were doing the lessons learned thing, in the sense of, you know, we've done this launch and this is where it went well, this is where it went wrong, rather than showing you just the great side of everything. And so that really built, and it ended up being at one point the largest Amazon seller meetup group in the world, because it expanded from UK, then it went into the LA meetup group and San Diego as well. So you've got the meetup aspect where you've got people with different levels and you've got a churn rate of people coming in and leaving. From that, I've had WhatsApp groups and Facebook groups that I've been part of, which are like little masterminds, but they flame out quite quickly, in the sense that you have a situation whereby people at different skill levels, and they'll start and then they'll fade out. And so those groups can start to fade. And then what I did last year, I put together a face-to-face group, because the point of it was is that everyone comes out of their offices and goes face-to-face. So they travel all over the UK. So I've got 16 people in the group. It's got to a point where we've let a couple of people in from the US and stuff. And now we end up doing Google Hangouts. And then we do every quarter or so, we do a face-to-face. And we have drinks and food and stuff. So there are different stages. And I'd always encourage people, where possible, to put yourself in the room with smart people. Be the least smartest person in the room so that you can learn.
Well, that having drinks and having that face-to-face, you find out you're human and they're human, right? Life doesn't always give you tea, right? Sometimes you you get the lemons, right? Not only the lemonade, right? And so that allows for that relationship to get deeper. And that's why I'm not a big mastermind fan either. I think it has to go deeper, because this isn't all business. Your life is your business now, isn't it? And it's different than when you were even probably, well, maybe the music business, there's probably a lot of similarities, because I see the successful musicians, their life, they can never get rid of that, right? They can't even, their privacy is completely gone, right? And so so I guess there's some similarities, but I don't see it as a negative having that in. When you go through difficult times, what happens with these relationships, right? I mean, that's really the key, because sometimes you got to be brought up, right? I mean, everybody's got to be brought up a little bit.
Yeah.
That's different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to think about, when you've had difficult times in your life, and we can talk about that, how did you get past them? Was it the group of people that you've met? Were they able to pull you through? Or is that self, were you able to pull it through?
Well, it depends on the period of the timeline. So let's just say I've had a situation where, I'll give an example. Last year, I had a product that was running, doing 80 units a day, that I had to pull off the shelf, which killed that product for Q4. I managed to come out of it a lot cleaner than I was expecting to, but it was 6 months putting into place, launching a new brand leading up to Christmas. It was caught up on the Hajin shipment, you know, the company that went under.
Oh, the big container shipping company.
Yeah, so the fifth largest or so in the world. Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong for this in the UK and the US. And, you know, it's sickening when you're pulling something off the shelf at 80 units a day. And so then all that time that you build into something takes away the profit of that product. You know, you're putting it in the bin. And the thing is, the way I operate is that we found out that the formula that we used was wrong and it was incorrect at factory level. And we can promise what it said on the tin. And I refuse to sell products that way. So we pulled it off the shelf. I could have tried to be sneaky and sell it through. But I think about karma. You know, you go, right. You've got to do the right thing. And as much as it pains you, pulls it off the shelf. But what helped there is that when you put that into the group, everyone problem solves for you. Mm. That's what I like about it. So even though that's not one of the most difficult periods of my life, that was a difficult time. And it's like earlier on in the year, I had a suspension where I had to sell on my brand of one of the products. And it's good having people like that that can feed back to you almost instantly. I just go, guys, look, this is what's happened. What do I do in this situation? You know what happens with suspensions and you have to do a POA and et cetera. But it's just nice when, you know, you open your chat and then half a dozen messages come back.
And that's hard as a guy, right? Because that just shows that, you know, I mean, immediately you think, I screwed up. I failed. I did it wrong.
Do you know what? Funny enough, because I've got a background in conversion optimization, I plan for failure. I don't expect everything to go right. And I do a huge amount of tests. Most tests fail. But you don't see that on the outside. And the thing is, when you know this with the test that you're going to do, you know that everything's not going to come out. It then bothers you less. It becomes more difficult when you don't plan.
A shortcut and you know you took a shortcut, that's the failure, right? Because you knew that if you did it the right way, which you've proven in the past, run my test, do this, that, it will work. Or not, but at least I've done it. When you jump ahead.
I mean, the way I look at it, say for that product, yeah? After I have a failure like that, I sit down and make notes and pull myself to pieces and what I've done wrong and everything else. And when I looked at it, I just looked at it and thought, right, I'm meant to be bringing these products in from China or wherever they need to be. Whereas what people are doing, and a lot of times, is yes, they're building the brand, they're making something a bit better. I tried to be all clever and Steve Jobsy by creating a product from nothing. And I didn't have the experience and the know-how and the chemistry and all those different things, but you work with other people. But you wanted, instead of going and getting the spatula, making that little bit better and start selling it, you go over the top. So then you spend too much time developing that product. And then you get to launching that product and then it goes wrong. And you go, hold on, I could launch three products in that same time period. So it's always learning and being honest about your mistakes. But I know what you're saying is, like, most guys, they may seem like they don't want to be wrong, or they get a bit embarrassed by it.
They're embarrassed, yeah. They get in a corner, suck their thumb, and can't get up from it.
Yeah, but if you can get past that and you realize, if you look at things in a different way, if you look at stuff right, I'm going to test this, and this is what it is a test. You're not putting your life on the line here. You're testing something. I think it's the mindset of how you look at it.
It's a perspective issue.
Or you won't bounce back. If you have like three runs in a row of something in different areas of your life, it's going to be difficult for you to bounce back. And a lot of that is down to the way that you think about and see things. And I think as you get older, you make more wiser decisions.
Yeah, because you build on them. So I call that, what I call those moments are crucible moments of your life, where that's where that steel is formed, right? That's what a crucible is, right? They pour that liquid in and it forms hardened steel, right? Yeah. And so this is Steve's observation, and I'm no psychologist, but I just think about that when that crap happens, because crap will happen in your life, you fall back to that foundation that you've built, right? That crucible, that steel that was built for you, right? You fall back on how strong it was. You've had to fall back a few different times. And let's talk a little bit personal, if you don't mind. I'm going to get a little personal with you here.
Okay.
You have had some big challenges in your life. You've not always been successful Danny McMillan, right? You have an air about you that shows success, and you're not arrogant. I don't mean it that way. You just, you carry yourself well. You've got a confidence about you, but that's been built up. You've got some war wounds for that, don't you?
Yeah. My first time online was an absolute disaster, you know.
Was it your fault? I mean, when you sit back and look at it. Okay,
yeah,
good for you.
If we break it down, I take complete responsibility for everything because it was on my watch. At the time, it's hard to see until later. So going back to those things as well. So let's take us back. We're going back to 2008, okay? So I'm just at the tail end of my music career. I'm still in the music business. I'm still DJing, producing, engineering, and doing mastering and stuff. And I'm also teaching at high-end colleges, like audio engineering courses and stuff like that. So I met a guy from the Gold District, and he said he wanted to set up an online music marketplace of some kind. And I said to him, what the F do I know about the internet? And he went, Danny, don't you worry. You will learn. And so we had this baptism of fire. So we spent 2 years pivoting from one end to this one extreme to another, because it was just trying to find our feet. And you've got to remember is that you leave one industry and then you just go straight into technology. Basically, you're going into startup culture without even knowing what SEO meant and what it stood for, let alone how to apply it to the business. So we've done everything you could possibly do wrong, in the sense that we spent a year producing a site. And it was basically a network and a magazine. It was a bit of everything to everyone. So you're bouncing from one extreme to another. And we didn't realize, like, when you're launching online, you can't treat it like an album, for instance. You know, you'd do the album, go on tour, then that's it. And then you move on to the next one. It's like cycles. Whereas online, everything grows incrementally. Do you see what I mean? It's about what you put in on a daily basis, and blah, blah, blah. So we had a situation where we bounced around from different idea to different idea. Eventually, the last stage we got to was turning it into a platform, which is a primary and secondary market ticketing platform. So we actually brought in the commerce aspect to the platform. We weren't relying on display ads, which we were at the time with a large editorial team. Okay, so it was about premium advertising, but we couldn't bring in the advertising because the recession just hit in that January of 2009,
right,
I think,
yeah,
or 2008. So what we've done there is, you look back now and you know you got everything wrong. So what we did is that was having investor meetings and like trying to change the direction. I'm trying to keep everyone employed and everyone in jobs. And then in the August of 2010, we shut down. And then we shut down, burnt through £500,000.
Devastating.
Devastating, yeah. And then basically for the rest of that month, I went on to another project of the investors to launch their studio complex, which had a skate park and everything else in, because of my experience in the music industry. But then with my team, I helped write their CVs. I smashed my black book, and they were all employed within four weeks or so from there. I made... you know, made sure that they got a bit more of a soft landing and built a great team, great relationships and everything else. But you have a situation where that all kind of takes effect. So when you get that kind of, and it's quite public because you're in the music industry and everyone knows you shut down and everything else. So it's, you're in a public forum. So that kind of knocks obviously your confidence, and you're like, well, what is next?
Do you feel like there's a spotlight on you? Right. And you're walking down the street and everybody's looking at, oh, there's Danny. Right. Is that what it feels like?
It feels that way. But obviously it's not that way, because all what's happening really is because it's happening to you, it's magnified, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you feel like the whole world's watching because you're embarrassed. It goes back to what you said before, that, you know, you feel a bit embarrassed if you don't get something quite right. So that was quite spectacular. You know, it was my first foray from the music industry, still music related, like a music startup. But that, I tell you what I did get from that, in that 2 years, was a massive learning curve. Because one of the funny things that came out of it is I was adamant that, I was going to stay online, and two, I managed to develop my conversion optimization and PPC skills, which would have probably helped rescue that business in some way, yeah, or at least generated a lot more sales to make it more viable. If I'd able to do it at that time, I think you can take on stuff too soon. And as much as you want to learn and absorb stuff, you can't always get there fast enough over your runway. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But were you forced to? I mean, in the end, you got forced to because you kind of were back against the wall. So yeah, you had to put your head down and do the work. Isn't that a lesson today, though? Because a lot of people get to rest on their laurels, you know, that phrase, right? They just kind of rest. Yeah. When, quite frankly, now is the time you should curl up and, you know, put your head down and do the work now, the hard work now, right? Is that a lesson that you took away from that too?
Yeah, I mean, I was always into working hard, and that was always my thing, because I always done what I love to do. So I didn't, you know, I thought nothing could put in 60, 80 hours weeks in. But what happens is when it's not going right and you got the burden of a team and everything else, it burns you out.
Yeah.
It weighs you down.
You're spinning your wheels. Yeah, you're not getting anything. You're not going forward.
That's right. So basically, you spend all your time putting out fires. Mm. But when you get that break away, you realize how much you did learn in that period. Yeah. Because I think you need that time away to really go, oh, I gleaned this and I gained that. And it taught me a lot of things. You know, it's like I went on after that, you know, I developed ways of like because I've launched lots of different businesses to try, you know, you take that extremity of a larger team, a year to get to market, to the point of, right, I'm going to launch this business over the weekend. I'm going to use PPC and a landing page. If it works, it's the business. If it's not, I don't need to build anything around it, because everyone goes off and spends 6 months developing a logo and write a business plan. But within about 72 hours, you could normally find out with a bit of PPC and a landing page whether there's demand.
$100. Right. It's $100, right? Lost $100. Okay. Next, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And big difference.
That's the big thing that you learn from it. And I think time, and especially as you get older, I'm coming up to 42 now, is very, very precious.
Wait, so, let me ask you this too. So since it was a crash and burn, and we would call it that, you now have seen the bad side of life, right? You've seen how bad it can get. Does that take away fear? I mean, are you a cautious investor, cautious product launcher, real cautious, and, you know, make sure everything's in line? Or are you kind of like, no, I know what I'm doing. I have a confidence. I'm going for it. I'm not waiting because I've been to the bottom. That's as bad as it can get. I know how bad it can get, right? Is that true?
I think, I mean, there's two parts to it, because if we were to complete the cycle of that story, is that from we shut down in the end of August, and then the private life started to unravel. Yeah. And so in the November, I lost my son. And then the following July, I lost my daughter.
Who were both stillborn, both children.
Yeah,
you guys are trying to have kids. And and you had not successfully had kids prior to this.
Yeah, I've got a daughter.
Oh, you do? Okay.
She's 12 now. So okay. She's lovely. And that makes a big difference.
So you were adding to the family, and this happens too.
Well, yeah, so basically you got the devastation of, you know, won the business, then you lose your son, then you lose your daughter, and then you nearly go personally bankrupt. And so it's like a complete reset. So it goes back to your question, well, about risk and everything else. When you've literally, and I mean literally, hit rock bottom across your personal and your business life, you can either stay down or you can bounce back. And I think what happens is when I equate stuff like in terms of risk assessment and stuff, you know, like some people say they manage stress, and they're really stressed out and everything else. I don't really get stressed on that kind of level. And the reason being, because when you've lost not only one but two of your children, there's nothing worse in the world than that. And so that puts everything into perspective. So you don't mind, you know, you might do a launch and lose a few grand, but you can bounce back from that, you know. And it's not, that's what I think what happens. You have different levels. And I suppose to answer your question straight, I've got to the stage now where I'm quite methodical and I'm data driven, but I don't think nothing of going for it. I'm like, if I say we're going to do something, it surprises people, because like 72 hours later, you know, it's just things like when we launched in Japan, you know, within 72 hours, I've got the account set up, I've got the first quotes done, and I move fast on stuff.
Okay.
And I don't. worry too much.
So you fell back. This is that crucible, right? So you fell back in your foundation back to that level, and you're able to build from there. And I think that that's the thing that I hope people hear, right? So here's a guy who's honest enough to say this. It's hard for a guy to say, you know, you've been to the bottom.
Yes.
You so-called failed. And yet you rose up like that phoenix, right? You rose out of those ashes, and the personal devastation would shut most, one, but to have two would shut most people down. And you've been able to build up on that. And so you basically have started a new foundation, right? Isn't that like the coolest thing ever? Don't you hope your daughter gets that to say, you know what, you're going to mess up. Everybody does. Or life's going to happen outside of your control, even worse, right? A recession, right? And
but
yet,
you know what?
You're past it.
The thing is that it's not that you passed it. You kind of remember that stuff. But going back to my daughter, you know, she's lived through this as well. So she's lost a brother and a sister. And it was me each time having to say that, you know, your sister's not coming home, your brother's not coming home. And she's only 12. So she's got broad shoulders as well. So I think my daughter's very grown up for her age. You know, she's just gone into like the senior school now. Very proud of her. And I think, you know, she'll be an entrepreneur, I think, as well. I think
so
by the time
she now has your foundation, that level established. So when she falls back, as everybody does, you fall back to that higher level, and then you're able to get right past. Oh, I love it. Give me the tingles. I'm telling you, Danny, give me the tingles on that one. All right. So let's talk business. Okay. You have really risen up above, right? You've gotten to that place. And it wasn't easy. So getting past the music business, getting past that, you've learned some skill sets. And now all of a sudden, are you looking for a direction? Is that what takes you to Amazon? Or what takes you there specifically?
I've got a great story on the Amazon thing, how I discovered it on the 31st of March, 2015. Basically, what I decided to do, I got to that stage where we just built, we've got a construction business. And we've just been building that out, and there's time left. You know, I understood the concept of the four-hour work week, et cetera, and we've taken an old school industry on in the construction world, and I optimized everything. So everything's canned response emails, you know, everything's automated to a point, so it's only a couple of hours a day. And it's like, well, what can I do next? And one of the things I thought to myself, right, I've never looked at marketplaces. So I thought, let me reverse engineer eBay, okay? So I spent a bit of time reading all the forums, set up eBay account, got a load of junk around the house, took some really dodgy photographs out in the garden in sunlight, you know, you're just trying to bumble along, packaged everything up, put it on my back, walked to the end of the road, got to the end of the road, realized that the post office is shut 2 years ago because I work from home, right? I forgot that the post office had shut down and I don't drive. My wife drives, but I don't drive. I've not needed to because of the nature of the work, the business I've done, and et cetera. So obviously I've come back with my tail between my legs thinking I've done this research on eBay. And in the eBay forums, it led me to Amazon FBA. And when I saw that, I was like, the lights come on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because hold on a minute. Dan's not going to be jumping on a bus every day with packages going to the post office because you've got Amazon FBA. So it's fulfilled by Amazon. So when I see that, I knew instantly, you know, like when you get like the warm glow and you're like, that's it.
I get
that
it.
That is it.
It's all these things have led you to this place, right? That's what it feels like. And that's, again, the tingles.
It's one of those things. It's like, you know, you want to work online, right? You know you want to run a company, but you may not want to employ a full development team and things like that. You think when you're doing Amazon FBA, you can run from an office on your house. You can employ everyone you need in terms of, you know, design work. You've got prep centers, you've got storage. All these things can be done, and you can do everything from your computer, but not necessarily have the consistent overheads of a technology or a product business.
I think understanding that, getting to that moment and acknowledging it, right? Because as you said, I mean, there are parts of the business you love and there are parts of the business you don't love.
Yeah.
And seeing that right? Just seeing that there's an opportunity, that then allows you to dive in. Because I think that's one of the hardest part. People get overwhelmed when they say, well, Danny, though, but you're sourcing, you're shipping, you're listing, you're finding all that stuff. Then you got to, wait, now I got to learn to advertise it and sell it too. That's overwhelming. But don't go there first. Just see this is the opportunity. Now match your skill set or your love to that piece of the opportunity. That was a big moment. Was this UK Amazon that you were looking at, or US yes. Amazon? Okay, so yes, it was UK.
So basically, we started with the UK. I brought in three different products because obviously I've been the conversion optimization.
Private label. These are private label products.
Yeah, but okay. Literally, we were going off to, what's it called?
Alibaba?
No, AliExpress.
Okay,
so
AliExpress.
I've got three products in there, tested 100 of each or so. The key thing I wanted to learn about it is like going breaking it down into those little fractions is let me get the understanding of the algorithm. Let me understand how the PPC platform works. It's very much different to, say, AdWords or Bing Ads, etc. Obviously, a lot less in depth because it's less parameter controls, etc. But the key thing was, let's test with these products. Can I understand it? And there's a video on YouTube that I've done, which is like a 40-minute presentation, which is trying to show the correlation between taking these three sample products and then showing you that when I put them into the ranking software, they're starting at minus 300. And then when you're spending on these keywords for PPC and the correlation between the ranking, you know. So I tested those three items in the UK. And from that, I decided, well, why don't I just go straight into the US? This product that I wanted to launch, which I still have to this day, we'll launch in the US. So in the summer, we launched the three products in the UK as a test. And then I went full on to the US in the November of 2015.
Hmm. When going to the US, that didn't intimidate you at all? Again, is this because you've been through it? You've been to the bottom. You can just push your way through anything.
Well, the other side of it, like I mentioned, being in the music industry, you're dealing with manufacturing anyway. Our pressing plant was one of the pressing plants we used was in France anyway. So you're still dealing with overseas.
Okay. So you just have that skill set. You've already developed that skill set. You just transfer it over. Oh, I love it. Love it. Love it. Okay. So now you're selling in the UK and you're selling in the US. The same product?
Well, I launched in the US in the November, and then when April, we went back to the UK with the same product. Yeah.
And why would you do it that way? You live in the UK. I mean, why would you go? Is it that big of a difference in the market, especially at that time, the US market, Amazon? Yeah, it would have been so much more developed.
Yeah, at that time, the market is larger, of course, and because it's dependent on your product, isn't it? So see, what happened, this is the key thing. Research suggests that the market was big enough to be sustainable in the US. So I took what we'd done in the US, obviously hit Q4, made some good money there, and I actually took a punt on the UK, wasn't sure how well it would do, because even though we've got the sophistication in the tools, they're not bang on, if you like. They're not guaranteed to give you the best data possible, especially if the products are not in super competitive niches. Yeah, so the danger is if you go for products that are not deemed as very competitive, or it's a one horse race, you could miss out. You know, you could have a load of stock that you can't sell because there's no competition, because there's no search volume. But we end up getting lucky to a point. At one point, we actually started selling in more units of the same product in the UK than we did with the US.
Did when you think about why? I mean, because you just blew me away when you said that, because I was not expecting that. I would think it would be 10 to 1 because the Amazon experience has been around for a lot longer, a lot more. I mean, it's a much bigger country, right? Much bigger audience, much bigger buyers. Where from this is Steve's experience dealing with and talking to other people that have sold in the UK is you guys still are not a very big online buying audience. I know it's changing and it's been evolving very quickly, but it wasn't, right? You're still used to having those massive department stores, right? Monstrous department stores. And people were used to that kind of shipping, and Amazon wasn't as developed in the UK. It blows my mind to hear you say that UK market exceeded the US market. That's news to me.
Yeah, but that's a product by product basis.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Okay.
So it's not the general rule. Like I would say, you generally over if you go across multiple products in multiple niches, the general understanding is the U.S. market's larger, therefore you're going to do larger amount of sales.
I mean, do you have 20%. any frame of reference you can give us? Is it one times sales, two times sales U.S. versus U.K.? Because you sell
this product itself was selling 1.5 times. Or nearly 2 times the size of the US.
Okay.
But
generally for your other products?
For the other products, I would say that the US sells like 30 to 35% more than the UK.
Okay. All right.
But it was just because this was, you know, this is your unicorn product. You know, I find it funny with most people but a lot of people I've spoken to, their first product, it always seems to be that because of the lack of knowledge and the romance around it of getting that product to market in the beginning and less sophistication, it ends up being, you know, one of your flag bearers. Do you know what I mean? Because you come after that, you've got all the flash tools, but that doesn't mean it's going to recapture the same as what you've done on your first.
Because there's
product.
A bit of luck, right? There was some luck because you didn't know any better. Now you
That's
do.
Right.
And now all of a sudden you're smarter. And then it's like, ooh. That didn't work. Yeah. Well, yeah, because it was serendipity or whatever it was that allowed that first one, like you said, the romance of it, that was your baby. Now, so looking now, right, so you're selling 15 products across 3 platforms.
Yeah.
When you break down your sales by U.S., U.K., and Japan, and I know Japan's relatively new, so it's a little bit skewed, what percentage are U.S. versus U.K. versus Japan?
Japan's new and there's only one product live because we only went live on the 3rd of August with the product that we got over there. Yeah.
But you've sold some stuff. You physically have sold stuff.
Oh,
there.
Yeah. No, we've ranked it. We sold. I mean, Japan, that's a whole new story. It's a lot more difficult because you're dealing, one, with a language barrier, half the tools that are not developed for Japan. And we end up spending a small fortune on our usual methods doing PPC. Which we switched out. I built and developed landing pages. We run Facebook ads. So we had a lot of problems in Japan, but we managed to, within about a week of switching to Facebook ads and storefront URLs and everything else, we got up to 16. But then we had a defect, so we had to pull the stock out to check it because it wouldn't take any risk. And now the stock's going back in. So I'm not worried about Japan. We've got another shipment going in, and we've got 2 products that we've earmarked that we want to launch in Japan anyway. So Japan's rolling along.
Yeah, but you know, as you say that though, I'm listening to how smart you are talking about what you did to overcome. Again, you're back to that. Problems come up, you adapt and overcome. But that will teach you, that'll carry forward when, you know, Amazon China launches or, you know, or I guess it's somebody is.
Australia, haven't you?
Right. Australia's coming down big time, right soon. All those things, those skill sets, that adaptation, right?
Yeah.
You're going to have to replicate. So you have a huge competitive advantage being able to do that right from day one in these other places.
Definitely. I mean, so then if we break down the numbers in the certain percentages, the US sales, because of the amount of SKUs, there's more leaning towards UK and European marketplaces. So it's probably about 60-40 in the favor of UK, Europe at this stage. But that will change because the product that we've launched into Japan, we're going to be relaunching that in the US. And to give an example, that does, the biggest seller in the US does about 2,500-3,000 units a month on this product. Because what we're looking at is that we keep refining this same product that's been good for us in these different marketplaces, which actually we're going to roll out to Italy next week.
Wait, what do you mean you're refining them?
Well, we've got to a stage where we've got an open relationship with our manufacturer on this one product where we do bill of materials. We know what percentage he gets and we showed our margins. We've done a screen share because of the issues that we faced in Japan. We showed him that what we want to do with this product because the product's really good. It's a luxury product, but the unit price is quite high. So what I said to him, look, we need to lean out this product. So we done an open book to make sure he got his 8%. And then we looked at the individual items that's costing us our money and the time it takes to manufacture those because time is money. So now we've broken that product down. We've shaved $1.40 off the unit price. The way that we package this now as well, we're using like these these like flute cartons whereby you got the dividers, you know, like what you'd have wine bottles in.
Yeah.
Putting those in these dividers doesn't change the weight, but changes the CBM, and the shipping can be quite expensive over to Japan. So it's, again, it's coming over these different problems. And while this is all happening, this is reshaping the margin, the sizing and everything for the product in the other territories. Because I think what happens, people launch a product and then they do a couple of minor refinements and that's it.
But and then leave it and they set it and forget it, right? They just leave it, move on and start another product or whatever. And you never go back and enhance it. That's what intrigued me when you said that you're enhancing it.
Yeah. So basically the problem we face with pulling the stock, it, like all that work to rank it, we get it to 16, get it onto page one, and then we have to pull it on a defect. And then every item's then being inspected. I don't think people realize how long that takes to go through that, go through all the spreadsheets. We spent over 100 hours trying to correct the path there. But the good knock-on effect of that is that we makes our product more profitable in these newer markets that we're moving it into. So we'll launch it into Italy next week and on this particular product, and we'll do the same for Germany. And because we've now come up with that structure now that we can work around the language barrier, these different territories like Japan, it makes it easier to do proper launches into these other territories. Because I think what happens is people forget that if you look at Europe on the whole, if you can get them selling, you've got a product with demand in each of those territories in Europe, it's like selling in the US or more, like on steroids, because the multi-marketplace. So what we're doing now is that most people in Europe go, okay, right, we're launching the UK and then we'll knock out a German listing and a France listing, and Italy's a bit sleepy and so is Spain, and don't put the effort in. So they might only do a fraction of what they do in the UK because that's where they're putting their effort in. But now we go from market to market with a refined product and refine the launch and do the launch sequence so it's very detailed, like we would do if it's the US or in the UK.
Do you use like checklists to keep track? Because what you're describing is a lot of moving pieces. I mean, a lot, right? I mean, each one of those. I mean, it's like this and that, do this and then this and then this. We can't go out of order. We got to do it in this order. Do you have checklists and things that you follow, that you refine over time, that you keep to get better?
Yeah, I mean, I document all my optimizations. Like my screen, I've got a 27-inch iMac. It looks like the Matrix when I'm running all my data, when I'm looking at overlaying and mapping keywords and stuff like that against the data that, you know, this is costing X. And if we launch here, where acquisition costs will be this, and then the cost per lead will be Y. And I think what happens is as you refine and refine and refine and your launch sequence starts to come together and you start to replicate that, that's where it makes it nice to gear up and start going, well, do I go and get another product, or do I take this current product that's gone into refinement in one territory, bring down the costs, and then launch it into another territory as long as there's demand there? So it's a no-brainer.
And how do you make that decision? I mean, just because you know that it's easy, that last step is easy, the one you just described, versus finding a product, developing it, and then going through that whole, I mean, obviously it's got to be a path of least resistance there, right?
Yeah. Well, I think what's happened is, you know, like, we've just discussed where that we had a great launch to a point in, was a bit wobbly, and we found our feet to launch in Japan. So we got through all of the issues, got to page one, which is the holy grail, isn't it? And then you're hoping that the product sticks. The day it gets to page one, you then pull it on the defect. You're thinking, oh my God, what we're going to do?
It's over,
thousands of pounds, blah, blah, blah. And then you pick through the bones. And then what you do is you take everything you learned. And so what's happened is that is actually put us in, even though it's a short-term cost, we were able to go open book with our manufacturer. We were able to shave off costing, and we were able to reduce the CBM, which reduced our shipping costs in these other markets that we're already selling in, and the ability to launch into the others. So
is it a better break even or more for you based on those sales?
What's that? Sorry.
Is it because, or the savings? Is it going to end up being a break even or a profitable venture, this little blip in Japan, by the time it's done?
Japan, right? Okay. So the blip in Japan was looking pretty costly at one point.
Right.
Yeah. So what happened is we negotiated a deal with our manufacturer. We wasn't very happy with the situation. He said, "What can I do to build our trust again?" So I said, one thing you can do is you can, because we've done open book and showed him our spreadsheets, I said, look, I could get to the fourth shipment here and we're on McDonald's wages, or I could wipe my mouth for this and we can move on, me and my partner Luke. And he, I think from that, he could see with the situation going on, he sees the opportunity in the other markets that he works with us on, and it's a big opportunity for him. And so he's actually agreed to pay an amount of money that is...
what you're describing to me is actually what Walmart does, where basically they go back to your manufacturer and squeeze out some more margins because there's, you know, but so they stay profitable and you stay profitable. It's just more reasonable for both of you.
Yeah.
And therefore you get that opportunity. Dude, that's Walmart level stuff, what you're describing.
I know, but
I hope people get that.
It's luck. Yeah, but I think it's luck because of the position we were put in, because it was either do we dump this product, wipe our mouth and move forward, or do we see what we can do to make it work? And it was in one of those situations where I said to the to our factory guy, I said, look, you know, you said that you want to put this right. Now you need to put that into action. What are you willing to do to put this right? Now you've seen our numbers. That's where the open book come. I've never worked with a factory open book.
Yeah.
I said to him, you need to earn your 8% because you're no good to me otherwise. If you have to cut corners and not make any money, you're no good to me because you're not going to deliver on your end. And I think that took him by surprise because everyone tries to pinch a penny out of a pound. I'm the opposite of that. My motivation isn't money. My motivation isn't profit. My motivation is make meaning and then you'll make money. So if you put everything, what you plan to do it right and do it in the right way, and it takes longer than the quick route, that's what I live by, if that makes sense. And and the advantage of that is that's where the Walmart situation come from, because he's gone, look, they've been honest with numbers. He's happy for me to earn money. And as soon as we were able to see the breakdown of these costs on this product, there was 70 cents knocked off here, 30 cents knocked off here. And you're thinking, that's crazy amount of money we spend on the product that doesn't add any value. Because one of the items had a, it's got a cover, which was $1.70 alone for the cover. But then it had an inner cover that was 70 cents. But it added no value. No one could see that inner cover. It didn't protect it additionally in any way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, why are we paying this? And it's only then you get to that, break it down on a granular level like that, are you able to then dip out some of these costs? So what happened is he's put money back in the pot because he realized he wants to build a relationship worldwide on these products. We've reduced our unit costs because we've taken elements away and reduced production time.
Unnecessary elements or non-value added, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. I mean, I hope people hear this, right? Because, I mean, you had a mistake. The mistake is going to end up saving enormous amounts of money, not costing you, but you had to pay some money up front, and now you have you've refined your process. So I hope people hear this again. You're selling roughly 15 products across three platforms, and one of those platforms are brand new. You now have, I want to make sure people get this, you're doing millions of dollars with this, and yet, rather than adding all these other products, you're able to enhance the ones you have. I think that's one of the biggest challenges, Danny, that people have, though, is they're saying, wait, if I do this, anybody can do this. And so therefore, I need to add more products because I just can't rely. I mean, I'm thinking of a seller, I don't want to say his name, and he sells one product, just variations of this one product. He's selling it on a multiple platform, doing millions of dollars a year, just got a licensing deal. How do you get that confidence that you can even out your product where you know you're doing it better than anyone else? Nobody else is going to be able to copy you. You know, I think that's the hard part, right? I mean, how do you stick to 15 and not get to 30? That's that fear. I think I would have that fear. It doesn't sound like you have that.
I think that, well, the thing is as well, is that these sell in different levels of denominations. They're not all out the park successful, but I prefer to actually look at what we got and review it, you know, and say, what can we kill off? Because time is a factor, isn't it? And then you've got to look at the volumes that they're doing. And you're always refining that process. So I don't think it's important to have how many products have you got. Therefore, that's what matters, is what is profitable, what is in terms of, you can protect yourself on, and what is that value of that product to the customer? Do you see what I mean? So some things are cheap and don't have value, and they, you know, flame out quite quickly, like trends and stuff. And you've got stuff that can sell on for ages. You've got stuff that looks sexy and shiny, and then you've got some steady, eddy, boring stuff as well. It's just determining what your portfolio looks like.
It's that portfolio mix. So are you here to say this, that frankly, I mean, let's just break it down, and this is in simple terms, and I know it's not as simple as this, but generally, if you're selling water glasses, which I'm looking at my water glass, if a water glass sells in the U.S., it'll sell in the U.K. as long as I do X, Y, Z, you know, A, A, B, B, C, C, right? If I execute the sales technique and all the rest of the things behind the scenes, this water glass will sell on all the platforms because everybody's drinking water, Steve, right? Don't be dumb. Everybody's drinking water. It's really the execution. And therefore, that's why you're spending all your time working on the execution from the manufacturer, because basically you're making him break down his cost. So you're really enhancing it all the way through to the end. You're optimizing almost every single piece, and therefore that's how you have success. Not necessarily bringing new products to market, is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is, it's
that's what I'm hearing.
We've got there through mistakes, right? And by doing path corrections, is that what brought us today? I'd like to reiterate, we're not doing multi-millions of dollars. We're across the 7 accounts that we had and all the partners, we're still in the 6-figure range. So I want to just be clear there, because I can't go into graphic detail on numbers because I have to respect my partners, but I don't like to lie about stuff and say, oh yeah, we're doing 7 figures. We've got close a couple of times. We're not quite there yet, but
with these 15 products.
So, and they've like some of, you know, there were periods where there was 10, there was 5, then it's 15, then it's 12. And it's, do you see what I mean? So it changes all the time, because you may kill off a product to launch another product to free up cash flow and stuff.
But what I'm hearing you say though is that basically this glass will sell across all the platforms as long as it's executed correctly and, you know, and back-channeled, right? So as soon as you figure out something new, you go back and fix it all the way through. That enhances your U.S. experience even more, right? And man.
So what I would say about that, about execution, your execution is fantastic. You can execute the best in the world. Like, you've got a strategy, you get to page one, you know how to do giveaways, you know how to stimulate the algorithm, all these different things. But it does come down to, at the end of the day, the punters vote with their wallets, and you get it to page one. If it sticks, fantastic. If it don't, then you need to reconsider what you're doing. Yeah. So I think some people miss the steps out of, right, I've got a product, I know how to rank, and they forget that ranking's only part of it, getting it there. The other part of it is the value proposition of the product.
Right. You know, because it's got to be good, right? It does have to be good.
Yeah. I mean, and more so now, you know, than it has in years. So it goes back to that whole point of, as soon as we worked out there was a defect, I pulled it all off the shelf. I don't want to risk a suspension on the account. We've just got into the market, and it's very easy to cross over to the dark side and go, do you know what? Let's sell that through. Let's see if we can sneak through without getting smashed on our feedback and our performance data inside of Seller Central. Do you see what I mean?
So it's cheap to get rid of it now because you're still in the beginning stages. It's not it gets expensive when you start refunding people and all the rest of the and like you said, risking your business. That's expensive.
So going back to the execution thing, in premise that you would execute in each and one of these markets, you know how to do each execution stage, but you're still at the liberty of the people accepting it into that market. You've got to allow for culture as well. So your glasses that you were mentioning to sell in each marketplace, you may know how to rank it and get it there to page one through giveaways, running external ads, et cetera, but ultimately it comes down to the other items on the page. Can you provide value? Do you offer differentiation? Is it a good product?
When looking at the UK market now, because you're also a buyer since you live in the UK, right? When you were a kid, did your parents go to the store, right? They went to brick and mortar stores, as I described it, in London, a massive department store. They don't do small. It's big, right?
Yeah.
today's market, it's obviously changing. Do you buy anything from the store anymore? I mean, have you completely made the conversion to being an online buyer, and therefore is the market that way?
For me personally, I'm biased in the sense that it gives me the ump if I have to go off of Amazon to buy something, because I know I've got Prime. It's easy and it's one click away on my phone. If I have to start fiddling around with these nonsense website that charge me for shipping and I've got to wait 5 days and stuff, that stuff kind of annoys me. But as a buying pattern in the UK, I think there's a big shift going on to line that's more trustworthy, and especially the younger generation that are coming through, because they were born into this culture anyway. Yeah. It's only like my parents like my mum will go, oh, I'm worried about putting my credit cards in, like, the data online, and is it safe then to put it into Amazon? I'm like, I think it's probably the safest place in the world to put your credit card data.
So my mom's the same way. She's like, would you buy this for me? I'm like, yes. I don't even debate anymore. I'm like, what do you want? I'll just buy it. Yeah. I mean, that way it just makes it easier. And then magically it shows up. Yeah, I don't know how it works. I'm like, all right, just send me the money. Okay. So is your advice then, right? Because you've been on both sides of it. I want to bring this to close. You've been on both sides of it. So you've had success in both markets. You've proven it. You've messed up, you fixed it, you adjusted, you go back, you fall back to that foundation, which is a lot higher based on your experiences, right? What's your advice for somebody now? They've got a successful private label product and they're like, okay, do I want to add another product? I got to add more products because there's a life cycle, right? That product. Or is it, wait, go look at other channels, other marketplaces, ideally the European market or the Japanese market, or as you said, Australia is coming really fast.
Yeah.
Is that what you're directing people now?
I would say if anyone out there is, before you think about anything, make sure you know your numbers. I think a lot of people talk about they know their numbers and say, oh, yeah, I'm on a 50, 60% margin, and they don't record everything, and they're not using like your Managed by Stats and these different programs. I would say when you get to a stage with your private label and decide, do I want to expand or anything like that? I would say tuck out your costs first. Is there a way that you can optimize? Because I think there's a big thing in the Amazon world, which is amazing. And I respect everyone and good luck to them. The 7 figures, 8 figures. I love seeing people being successful, but don't get blinded by turnover because that's vanity.
Yeah.
What you got to think about is how much money you making a day off these products. And how much of that can actually be extracted to put on your pocket? Because I've got guys in my group, which I can't name, but they do hundreds of thousands of pounds a month. But, you know, they don't have the cash in their pocket. It's all tied up in stock. So
right, it's all turning over, just turning over. And you use the phrase tuck. That means to cut, right? That's what you mean by that, right? No, I get it. But I just want to make sure you would have never believed that you could have from your manufacturer had you not had that Japanese experience. You would have not believed that you could have taken more costs out, right? You thought you got the best deal you could. But by opening yourself up and exposing yourself, and then he did the same, now all of a sudden this magic cost got found. So I think the point here is that there's always a way to cut your costs. There's always something there that can get tucked. I'm using your term.
So cut your costs first, and then see what you can get out the same factory and whether you can create maybe more variations or a secondary product in that market. Because one thing I've been looking into more and more is because I can't stand the whole – I love my people at the factory who I deal with. So let me be clear in case they hear this. But I just hate that round robin on the email and the tedious work of getting the POs together and agreeing all terms. That bit I don't enjoy. But if there's another thing that you could do is like try and use the same factory as many times over as possible where possible. And even consider if your niche is big enough, why not be one of the market leaders? Maybe you'll be in the third biggest. Why not bring out another product under another brand name? I think they call it Blue Ocean. You put it under another brand name and you just go into the same niche. You know all the keywords. If it's big enough, you might as well be 3 and 4. That's safer sometimes than actually going to find a new product, going to a new factory, generating new logistical costs and everything else. Just try and bring as much as you can out the same factory, or bring out rival products of the same product if the market's big enough.
If the market's big enough. Oh, damn, that's deep too. Okay, so people are interested in finding out more. Now, you have a group, you have a, is it a weekly, the seller sessions, is this weekly that you put out these this information or once a month or what is it?
Yeah, so it's weekly. If you go to sellersessions.com, we publish every Wednesday. It's also published on YouTube. So it's basically video content. And what we focus on is advanced marketing for Amazon sellers on and off Amazon.
And this is strong stuff. I mean, this is deep stuff. You're not, I mean, I look at some of the people you've had on the show and it's, I mean, you've got some very strong sellers who know a lot about a lot of things.
Yeah, I think it's important. It's like, I you know, I grew up and I came through listening to you, like you and Scott, and you do great jobs. I think like with yourself, you cover the story, the entrepreneur and everything else. And then Scott is very good with what he does with the beginners, and he offers a lot of content as well. And think if you're going to do stuff like this, you need to have your lane, if you like. And I've tried to focus Seller Sessions purely on marketing. We don't cover product selection or suspensions or anything like that. So we're trying to navigate those waters. And I think with Amazon sellers, one of the key things they'd like to know about is what's the latest changes happening in external traffic, PPC, AMS, and stuff like that. So that's kind of our lane we've been working towards, yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, so that's sellersessions.com. If somebody has some follow-up questions and they want some more information specifically about UK or, you know, now Japan, and I'm assuming, as you mentioned, Australia, your plan is to get in there. Where's the best place? Point. Yeah, where's the best place that somebody can follow up with you if they have more more questions?
Of course, yeah. Just drop an email to danny@sellersessions.com.
Danny at sellersessions, man. Well, I'm excited to start getting into these because I know some of the people that you've interviewed, and I mean, there's some strong people in there, and so I'm excited to start digging because ultimately you're talking about enhancing what you already do. And I just think that that's so powerful. Don't necessarily go out and reinvent the wheel. Make sure you're doing everything right. And what you called it, that small path adjustments. I love that term. I think that makes a lot of sense. Man, I really appreciate you taking the time. You know, I know there's a big time difference for us. You've offered a lot of value. I love the climb back up. It can be done, right, Danny? I mean, that's the lesson. It can be done.
I think it's just down to a lot of it's down to mindset. And if you can, it's easier if you do what you love. If you do what you love, it's not a job. So when you do bounce back, it's a lot easier.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. I wish you nothing but success. Take care.
Thank you.
Man, oh, man. Smart dude. Very cool. You know, I really beat him up on that, you know, that Japan thing. But I think it's so cool that, you know, what I was trying to say was he learn something, spend a bunch of money, and then made money in the long run by making those adjustments all the way backwards. He said it so much better than I did. I kind of fumbled it, but that blows my mind because I don't think people think that way. You'd be like, oh, I lost. Those are sunk costs. They're gone. Well, no, because now your variable costs went down in perpetuity and they went down across these other places. So that lesson, that tuition, if you look at it as tuition, it's going to pay off forever. Oh, love it, love it, love it. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Don't forget my sponsors. I'm loving the Gay Lisby's $1 million arbitrage list. Amazing. You got to go look at it. 7 days free trial. When you can buy that volume of merchandise and they teach you what to do, it's so powerful. ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.